on today's Run to the Top podcast.
What do you think about when you sit down to a meal? What do you aim for on your plate? And for some people, it might be they want their mouth to feel good, or they want to feel extra full in their stomach. I like to have them look at their plate and think, okay, do I have a source of quality carbohydrates, a source of lean protein, and a source of healthy fat? So that should be the starting point.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Who aspires to run a marathon or improve from the last one you ran? Who doesn't, right? Today's interview is with Jackie Dykus, nutritionist and champion marathoner. Today, Jackie and I will be discussing her own marathon training techniques when she participated in the 2008 and 2012 Olympic marathon trials, and she also won the 2010 Indianapolis Monumental Marathon, along with her suggestions for us mere mortals who would love some additional advice on how to eat during training, taper, and race day. A brief intro bio before actually speaking with Jackie will give you the basics. Jackie Dykus, RD, CSSD, CLT, we'll learn about those later, is an accomplished marathoner and nutritionist. Her athletic career is highlighted as a participant in the 2008 and 2012 Olympic team trials in the marathon, winner of the 2010 Indianapolis Monumental Marathon, and 15th place finisher, female finisher, in the 2008 Chicago Marathon. Currently, Jackie specializes in sports nutrition and food sensitivities through her own business called Nutrition Success. She also speaks on nutrition, health, wellness, and exercise in a variety of settings and has contributed articles and tips for Running Times magazines and other popular magazines, including Runner's World, Women's Running, and Shape. She is the book author of Finish Line Fueling, An Essential Guide to Runner's Nutrition, and clearly has a lot of information to share. Let's talk marathon nutrition with expert Jackie Dykus. Thank you for joining me today, Jackie.
Thanks for having me, Stephanie. I appreciate it.
Well, let's start with our normal four basic questions for all of our guests. I'll give them all four to you and then you get to answer. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where are you living now? And what is your favorite race distance or type of race?
I am 38 years old and I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, but my husband brought me to Indiana and we currently live in Westfield, Indiana, just north of Indianapolis. And by far, my favorite race is absolutely the marathon.
That's not surprising, considering your background. I'm really looking forward to talking to you more about your own training techniques when and now as well. But let's start off with clarifying all of these nutrition terms, or at least nutrition additions to your title, RD, CSSD, and CLT. What do those mean?
Yeah, well, I'm a registered dietitian, and I specialized in that nutrition realm as a certified specialist in sports dietetics. And then later on, I became certified as a certified LEAP therapist. It's a stands for a lifestyle, eating, and performance therapist. And basically, that's a specialty in food sensitivities.
So what kind of training is involved in all three of these? I know the RD is quite medically oriented. I don't know about the other two as much, but can you go into some detail on what kind of training you had, as well as what that actually means to be a registered dietitian?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a bachelor's degree in dietetics, and then I completed a 900-hour internship and took an exam to become a registered dietitian. And then within that, there's another specialty, the certified specialist in sports dietetics. And boy, I've done this a while ago, but I feel like it was a 900-hour, again, commitment. I think it's more now. But a 900-hour certification process that you also sit for an exam. And then the certified LEAP therapist also involved sitting for an exam and testing with that as well.
So what not that it really is too surprising, but you moved into this sports arena with your nutrition. And it also sounds like you deal some with food sensitivities and that kind of thing. What led you in those directions?
Yeah, it was a neat evolution, I think. I've always had an interest in sports dietetics, but initially after my degree, I wanted to have a really great base knowledge of kind of just the everyday evidence-based kind of clinical environment that comes with being a dietitian, learning about diabetes, heart disease. I wanted that foundation. And also I was always had that interest with running and how, you know, what we eat really affects our performance. And after that time period, I had about 5 years of that base experience. I really dived into the sports world more and was able to apply that information for the clients I work with. I feel like it melds kind of understanding kind of any medical situation that comes at you, whether you've got even an athlete who's diabetic or something along those lines. But also, you know, it was 2008 that I qualified for the first Olympic trials. And at that time I was a registered dietitian and I had a great base of information. There's no question about that, but it was after that time that I became certified as a sports specialist. And I really, I don't know, I just embraced the deeper concepts that I could apply even to my own performance. And I just felt like it helped me thrive and I loved it. And the science of it and just applying it felt amazing. And then as it evolved later, I worked with a number of clients who came to me with food sensitivity testing. And I thought, boy, I don't know enough about this to feel like I can support them like I would or could. So I dove into that world. And even now how I apply that information to the athletes I work with, it's just, it's amazing. It's so thrilling to see how different foods people eat affects their immune system and therefore can affect their performance as well.
Yeah, I want to ask you about your own nutrition and training techniques for the Olympic marathon trials, but I was really fascinated by the question that I had of what you did or what you didn't do during your training nutritionally and how that has evolved. So can we go back to actually before your first Olympic marathon trial and talk about how you got to qualify for it and what the nutrition aspect of it was that got you to that point, and then also what you did for all three of your main marathons that you, you know, you performed so well in them. How did that evolve over the period of time from 2008 to 2012?
It was quite a process, honestly. I think now, boy, if I knew what I know now, then. but, you know, originally I did run in college and I took some time off and I ran a few marathons after college following the basic programs you find on the internet, like most of us do.
Yeah.
And I did fine. I trained myself. I was probably doing 30 miles a week or something and ran 3:15s. I wasn't very aggressive, but I did several marathons in that realm. And I had my first son. And after that time, I thought, you know what? I kind of want to pick this up a little bit more. I don't know what it was, but all of a sudden I started doing more speed work than I ever did during that time between college and having my son. And I gained a lot of fitness during that period and then even acquired a coach, Matt Ebersol, with Personal Best Training. And he's the one who really gave me the nudge. I had some successful performances and he said, you know what? I wonder if you should just go all in and give this marathon trials thing a shot. So I went all in with him and he worked me up to training around 90 miles a week. And my first try at the Chicago Marathon, I qualified. So I can't say it was a long time goal of mine. Mm-hmm. I was still at the age where I was going through the learning process of things, but he definitely was the inspiration that got me working towards qualification. But at that time, I'd say fueling for me was more, I was a dietitian, but it was kind of standard information, I would say, where I would go based on how I felt. I'd want to feel light when I was running. You know, I'd avoid foods if I thought they would maybe cause a little stomach upset, make sure I'm drinking enough, really basic guidelines. And it did fuel me well. It's not that it didn't, but when I was able to become a certified sports specialist and tailor that a little bit more to, you know, appropriate amount of carbohydrates, protein, especially before and after workouts, and tailoring the amount of carbohydrates you want during these longer training workouts and racing, I started doing more with sweat rate and calculating how much fluids I should be taking while I'm racing. And I felt like that was really the nudge that, I don't know, running just took an exciting shift. It wasn't just kind of working the workout into the day. It felt like it was this act of science I was performing. I don't know. It felt really neat to see those changes and how that could apply. So I feel like there was a significant shift in that information. And then even now, I would say I'm not as competitive as before, but I do find now that I have an appreciation for food sensitivities and how different foods, people respond to their immune system differently, it has me thinking in a whole different way. Kind of the foods I was maybe afraid of before for fat and fiber and things like that just might not have been foods that were ideal paired for me.
That's a good point, and I'd like you to elaborate on that some. It does seem like as you fine-tune things, the nutrition part becomes quite individualized. I mean, there's these macronutrients, obviously, and I'd love you to break those down. But then how much in percentage, you know, how much people need, it varies from person to person, doesn't it?
It does, I think, significantly, because, you know, I can think of even different stages in my life. After I had my second son, I got back to training right away, and I was nursing him at the same time. So between nursing and running 80 miles a week and just the normal stresses of every day, boy, it got challenging to keep up with the amount of fuel I needed.
Wow.
I think the lifestyle people lead, whether they have a desk job or a job where they're active all day, maybe a landscaper or something along mm-hmm. those lines, mm-hmm. that can make a difference. And, you know, I find myself maybe even in my early days, I was educated in as a dietitian with somewhat of a calorie emphasis. I think even when I was in college, it was kind of the stay away from fat days.
Yeah.
But as it evolves, I don't like to focus on calories very much at all. I focus much more on each macronutrient based on the person's body weight and activity level and things like that versus just a pure calories in, calories out approach.
So talk about the macronutrients, just to clarify that for our listeners. And also, you know, I've started thinking of calories more as a level of energy rather than actual calories. And I think that it helps me anyway, kind of define that some days I'm going to need more energy than other days. And so the food that I eat is going to help give me that energy, and the form of the macronutrients is also going to be important. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, it really is. I think in terms of focusing on macronutrients in the sports world, you want to focus a lot on pairing carbohydrates with protein, whether that's before your workout or after your workout or just even throughout the day. I think sometimes people either skip breakfast and do a light lunch, and then they're hungry all night long and just eat everything. Where I feel like if we think about macronutrients in terms of carbohydrates, quality carbohydrates, you know, carbohydrates with fiber and that are filling, good carbohydrates, not just sweets or sodas or the simple, pairing that with good lean protein and quality healthy fat every time we eat just seems to bring the day together without feeling like you need to stress over the number of calories and how many grams of this or how many grams of that. I feel like if every time you eat, you've got at least some source of protein, you're more likely to hit that protein target by the end of the day mm-hmm. than if you do that skip breakfast, try to go light for lunch and then eat all night long. It's really hard to keep it straight what you have and how many calories and did I get enough of this or that, where I think of it as in terms of racing, I think of this too, but just a slow IV bag we're putting our body, just steady fueling that balance consistently in the day with regular meal patterns, I think can really support not feeling like one extreme or the other is being a snowball effect too.
So go through let's say the typical 16-18 week training regimen for a marathon and talk about the nutritional needs during that period of time. During the building up of miles, during the increase in endurance, and then maybe spend some time also on those taper weeks at the end, and then also on race day. I know that's a lot of questions, so maybe start with the let's say if it's an 18 week training program, then probably 16 weeks or so of how do you build up that nutrition and keep your energy levels up.
Yeah, I think one way kind of touched on it before, but that lead up, really the emphasis is when I normally sit down with someone and I say, what do you think about when you sit down to a meal? What do you look at or what do you aim for on your plate? And for some people, it might be, you know, they want their mouth to feel good or they want to feel extra full in their stomach or things like that, mm-hmm. where I like to have them look at their plate and think, okay, do I have a source of quality carbohydrates, a source of lean protein, and a source of healthy fat? So that should be the starting point. And then I have two other points I like to add to that. It's color, how big and beautiful, I call it antioxidants. How many antioxidants can you add to that plate? So how big and colorful can you add with vegetables and fruits and really a colorful plate? And then the fifth component is how much water are you getting in the day? Are you drinking regularly? That is really the foundation of a quality training diet. Mm-hmm. And that should be the emphasis over those 16, 8 weeks and even those final weeks leading up. We might play with serving sizes there, but and you know, if someone's trying to lean out a little bit more, it can be just as simple as, okay, well, let's place a little bit more emphasis on covering that plate with that antioxidant category.
Yeah.
But we still need to make sure that all of those components are there. We can't just cut one category altogether and expect training to go great. And there's just more chances of missing great nutrients that really fuel your diet or fuel your training too, like magnesium. And magnesium is something great from whole grains. And if we cut whole grains completely, well, then we might fall off on a category that really serves fueling the stress and the level of activity you want to maintain with training too. So
now talk about gaining muscle during that period of time so that maybe you're not losing weight, but you're becoming much leaner. Can you describe that and kind of how that would feel?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's helpful for a runner to even not weigh themselves or go longer periods. But yeah, the mirror can be a great guide if they see muscle forming and things like that, but the scale is going up a little bit. It could just be an indicator that muscle mass weighs more than fat mass and they're doing a great job leaning out and they might feel great in their clothes, but they're confused over the scale. So that's when it's just helpful to put the scale aside unless you're calculating a sweat rate.
Okay, so moving on here into the taper weeks and also race day. As you know, a lot of people have a problem with having to go to the bathroom, upset stomach on race day. Let's stay away from the race day nutrition and go to that sort of that taper week. What would that look like differently? Because you alluded to it, but add a little bit more detail. Those maybe 2 weeks before the race day.
Yeah, 2 weeks before, it's really, you know, it's debatable. For the runner who's really been doing intense training, sometimes I don't like them to even cut back on what they're eating a whole lot those first few days, because I feel like there's an element of catch-up that occurs where someone feels like they can even eat normal and they notice a shedding or a leaning just because their body's not under that same stress load. Mm-hmm. And it allows the body to repair. So in some ways, they might not eat much differently, at least to the early stages of that 2 weeks. But otherwise, it might mean if you're less active, there's potential to cut back a little bit on what you're eating. And this is as simple as maybe not snacking as often or something like that. It doesn't have to be huge, drastic changes. I know there's a lot of people these days who actually maintain quite a high training load up until really that marathon week.
Mm-hmm.
So there really might not be changes 2 weeks out, but leading up to that final week and those few days leading up to the race, that's where I would really emphasize paying more attention to what is going on your plate. In terms of that balance I described, we're going to shift that a little bit where each day, I normally like to do a progression. I think it's easier than feeling, I've heard enough stories where people just think they have to eat a whole lot those last few days. They feel like they're gaining a whole lot of weight because they're trying to quote unquote carbo load.
Yeah.
And that's not really the goal we're aiming for. I still want them to feel fit, lean, and fast. So, but we still want to stock those glycogen stores with those important carbohydrates. So it's more of a shift. Emphasize as the days approach more carbohydrates on your plate. Then I just take away more of the fat category a little bit. So an example would be, let's say someone has a sandwich with a slice of cheese and mayonnaise on top. Well, they might get rid of that mayonnaise and cheese and just replace it with an apple. Or, you know, it's a shift more in where the calories are coming from more so than adding a whole bunch more calories, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And talk about fiber there as well, because I know fiber is definitely an issue for a lot of people on race day, but of course it's going to be accumulating the days before the race.
Yeah, I think actually that's very individual. And that's where kind of even the food sensitivity world has been exciting for me to find out. You know, sometimes it's just a few foods trigger for individual people. Some people might be perfectly fine with a black beans the day before and feel like it fuels them just the way they like it, where someone else might feel like it offers a reaction that they feel like they're running to the restroom. So part of it is being in tune throughout this whole training cycle. It really shouldn't be that you're changing much from what you did those previous 14 to 18 weeks ahead of time, or however long the training cycle is. The goal throughout that entire training cycle is to figure out what foods your body really loves and what ones it doesn't really care for. Big culprits, though, are fiber and dairy, really those that day before in the race morning. Mm-hmm. So I'd be careful with those. And then, I'm not sure if you've heard of some of those instances where even just race expo food or some item has gone wrong and kind of influenced the race. I believe that happened was it Nevada? Not several years ago, but much of the race ended up ill from something that happened at the expo.
Oh.
So normally I just say, just stick with your regular foods. If you're grabbing snacks at the expo, just save them in your baggie for after the race instead of munching on those things. Let's just stick with regular food you ate throughout training. Be sure to test that pre-race meal throughout training. And then really that race, especially if it's a destination race, it's very helpful to look up the restaurants in the area that might have food similar to what you eat at home. So mm-hmm. if you have that standard baked potato meal, well, let's find a close restaurant that serves that baked potato meal and see if you can get a reservation there the night before.
Interesting.
So really just sticking with the food you're comfortable with and that fiber load you're comfortable with is really appropriate. But I've had people tolerate virtually no fiber to loads of fiber. That's one of those things that I think, like you mentioned before, is just very individual.
Yeah, but you also made the point of testing it ahead of time, not waiting until race day to do something different.
And, even testing ahead of time from the meals you eat the night before the race morning and during the race, what a confidence booster. I feel like when you know exactly how your body responds to what you're eating, there's less anxiety. You just feel like you're ready to go and the race is for you to own. So it seems tedious and a little bit of a pain sometimes during the training cycle when you don't necessarily feel like testing those items, but it really is so beneficial.
So talk about the time allowed before the actual race eating and what you advise there. So we're talking race morning and we've already determined that we're eating a meal that we've had before in the morning before a training run, but now it's race day. What kind of time allotment should there be between eating that meal and then actually racing our marathon?
Well, one of the biggest things to keep in mind is the closer you get to the race, the less you eat. The further out from the race, the more you eat. Mm-hmm. So I know some people hate calculating numbers, but I do like to throw a number guideline out there just as a starting point for some people. I like to use a guideline of 30 to 60 grams of carb paired with a source of protein per hour that you eat before the race. And really that concept just hits home. The closer you eat, the less you eat, the further out, the more you can eat. So if you eat 2 hours out, you could look into as much as, 100 to 120 grams of carb paired mm-hmm. with a source of protein at that meal. Mm-hmm. We want to go light in fat too, because fat takes longer to digest and can leave you a little unsettled during the race.
Yeah.
So you can have a little fat, but this isn't the time to, do 3 tablespoons of peanut butter. That would be a quite a fat load going into the race, but a little bit of peanut butter is just fine. And some people feel more satisfied with that. So a guideline of the 30 to 60 grams per hour of carbohydrates paired with protein, light, low in fat. And we want to be drinking enough fluids to support light colored urine as a sign of appropriate hydration. And if someone goes with a whole food meal, which let's say an example would be if someone chose a bowl of oatmeal with a banana and maybe plain Greek yogurt or a little bit of Greek yogurt there, mm-hmm. The yogurt adds some sodium there. Let's say that yogurt's not even there, but if it's virtually a sodium-free meal, I say, especially on a warm day, don't be afraid to sprinkle a little salt on that meal.
Yeah.
And drink your fluids with that to support, that hydration factor. So yeah. Does that answer your question or do you have more within that I maybe missed?
No, I think that was pretty good. Again, this is really all dependent on testing these things ahead of time. So you already know that these foods work for you and that your stomach tolerates them and all that kind of stuff. Because of course, race day is going to be different than any other day of training, but you want to have things as familiar as possible, right?
I agree. Yes. And even just before the race, maybe 10 or, anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes before, I like to encourage another little bolus of, whether it's someone chooses sports drink or whatever their favorite way to hydrate beforehand is, that's well time to go into the race well hydrated as well.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Okay. Electrolytes. let's say, building up to race day. So we're talking maybe that last week. Do you add extra electrolytes? And then in the morning and during the race itself, what are your recommendations on adding to the liquid in terms of electrolytes?
You know, I think if someone's drinking an electrolyte beverage to support just hydration, especially if the electrolyte beverage has carbohydrates in it, mm-hmm. Maybe appetite's down. And I know for me, sometimes it seemed like the one day you're kind of said, just eat, you have no appetite because nerves start to kick in. So I think sometimes those sources can come in handy just to make sure you meet your carbohydrate goals, especially if nervous energy's there. But outside of that, I think a lot of typical eating, especially for those traveling for marathons, likely contains enough sodium. We're dining out more, and a lot of those meals just happen to be prepared with more sodium. So I don't think that any extremes need to be those days before. Mm-hmm. Just making sure that we're not going sodium-free and things like that should be sufficient. The morning of, especially if it's a warm race, I think including an electrolyte beverage can even encourage the desire to just simply drink. So, and again, if someone prefers just water, then maybe sprinkling a little extra salt on their low sodium meal, if that's how they normally are. But I don't think that there has to be any significant differences during those windows for a typical race.
Yeah. And you did talk earlier about the sweat rate, and could you go into that more? Because that probably is a really important aspect of race day and kind of determining what the temperature is going to be and how much you're going to be sweating out.
I think that was one of my biggest tools that I felt made a big difference from my first Olympic trials to my second. Well, because, you know, I try to gauge drinking. Mm-hmm. But for me, I know some people are really in tune to their body and capture that. I apparently am not. You know, I feel like anytime I finally realized I was thirsty, I was too far dehydrated to really play catch up. Gotcha. And it took me a long time. When I trained for my first Olympic trials, I remember always coming home craving popsicles. And now I can look back to thinking, well, it's just because I was thirsty, you know? So, yeah. There's things I wasn't putting together at the time, but when you calculate your sweat rate, what you do is, you go for a run. It's easiest if it's just for about an hour run, because it makes the math simplified.
Yeah.
But you go for an hour run and you weigh yourself nearly nude before you run. This is after you had anything to eat or drink. You went to the bathroom the last time. But something as simple as maybe for a male, just maybe slider shorts or your underwear, or female, their bra and underwear, and weigh yourself. Then you go for your run. And if you decide to drink during that run, you would keep track of how many ounces you had during the run. If you use the restroom, normally I just say toss that day and give it another try, because it's too hard to figure that in.
Right.
But you keep track of any ounces you have. And when you return, before you run to the kitchen and drink any fluids or use the restroom, you be sure to hit the scale again in the same apparel you wore beforehand. And the reason why I encouraged nearly nude is because your clothes hold that sweat and we don't want that to weigh into it. So you weigh yourself after, and we take the number of pounds lost and multiply that by 16. So if someone lost 2 pounds over the course of an hour run, we would multiply that 16 and get 32 ounces. If they didn't drink anything during that run, that would equate to about a 32 ounce per hour sweat rate.
Mm-hmm.
If they drank, let's say, 10 ounces during that run, we would add those 10 ounces to the 32, and their sweat rate now becomes 42 ounces per hour. And that is, you know, it gives a much better ballpark of how much to drink per hour. I never encourage totally to match that sweat rate. So if someone comes back with a 32 ounce sweat rate, I don't say drink 32 ounces per hour.
Yeah.
I usually back off from that a little bit, but we might say, let's say we practice that and we do 6 ounces every 15 minutes on the next training run and see how their sweat rate fares, or how their weight loss, I should say, fares. The goal is to maintain somewhere within about a 2% to 3%, weight loss. If we exceed that, that's when performance can start to suffer. But I do want to note in there that it is beneficial to lose a little bit of weight. So we don't want to come back necessarily the exact same, and we never want to return having gained weight. That's a sign of overdrinking.
Yeah.
But to be down a pound or two or whatever's within, maybe let's say that 1% or that 1.5% is totally normal. And I would say that that's exactly where you want to be.
That is really useful information, and I think something that's not talked about a whole lot. So thank you.
I don't think so either. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, in terms of race nutrition, I think it's such a fun tool during the race. So you can take that sweat rate and divide it out per aid station. And I'd love to share one more tip with aid stations. Yeah. So when we're actually taking in that fluid, someone says, oh, well, when I hit an aid station, how do I know I'm drinking 6 ounces? What I like to encourage everyone to do is to go home and measure 1 ounce of water and put that ounce of water in your mouth. And you'll notice there's a pressure around your cheeks and in the back of your throat, and just let it sit there and feel what 1 ounce feels like. Mm-hmm. And now when you go to the aid stations, you think to what that feels like. And if you normally throw back your cup and you drink half of that, then count that as half an ounce. And you use that at each aid station as kind of a counting system. So let's say if someone really takes smaller sips or smaller mouthfuls and it equals half an ounce, they would want to try to drink 12 swallows at each let's say each 15 minute mark to meet their 6 ounces if that's what they're shooting for.
Yeah.
But it turns into this neat counting game that actually is a distraction from the race, but yet you're still present in the race. Uh-huh. And it's a confidence booster because you know you're drinking just to what your body actually needs. I think it's a win-win.
Wow, so, what a great tip.
I think it's wonderful. One thing I do want to mention, though, the weather does make a difference with your sweat rate. So mm-hmm. if someone tests their sweat rate in December and goes out for a July marathon, they're going to be two different sweat rates. So we wouldn't want to drink to that December sweat rate just as we wouldn't want to drink to the July sweat rate in December. So to calculate at different times of the year with changing the season does play a factor too.
Totally. Now, water versus electrolytes. And I'd love to have you address this because I know there are issues on both sides. Too much water can be a problem and too many electrolytes can be a problem. But mainly I'm interested in what you think about drinking water in the aid stations versus electrolytes if you're not familiar with that electrolyte.
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, a lot of times I don't think they're talked about enough too. And in fact, I think a lot of the gels on the market are much lower electrolyte than people realize. Like 25 milligrams of sodium in one gel is nothing.
It's tiny.
So especially if we've got a hot weather race where you need 32 ounces per hour. So that's where some products like there's electrolyte capsules that can come into play even mm-hmm. for those races, especially if someone's really unsure with, you know, maybe they know they don't do well with the sports drink that's on the race. They can test these electrolyte capsules in training and mm-hmm. they're so light and easy just to throw somewhere on your body, wherever you decide to tuck them away. But, I would suggest to pair it with that during the race, to make sure you're meeting a more appropriate electrolyte goal.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Now, what about supplements and powders? And this is probably more during training than actual race day. But what are your feelings about supplements and those, protein powders and that kind of thing?
Well, I certainly think they have a place, but I definitely think that there are better products on the market than others. And the more evidence we have to whether you really need a supplement or not, the better. So if someone tests that they have low ferritin and we find out they need iron, well, we'd get a really great quality iron and make sure they're taking iron or vitamin D, things like that, mm-hmm. Which are big ones that I do suggest not to put off, especially if someone has an annual physical or something, or even let's say we've got a younger runner who's, maybe newer to the idea of even supplements in general. I do encourage testing ferritin, vitamin D, magnesium, zinc. Those are some big ones that I think would be really beneficial to supplement if someone's low. That can be night and day in terms of their performance, injury healing, things like that. So, but outside of that, I do emphasize a whole food diet as often as possible. And I think when we focus on whole foods and less prepackaged and really great quality ingredients, a lot of those other factors will just come into place.
Right.
But a measurement, even myself, there was a stage where it felt like, you know, we had young children and money was tighter and to do all this testing seemed burdensome. It felt like it was maybe a little hard, didn't know where to begin. So a lot of times I encourage my athletes to use a program called Chronometer. It's, are you familiar with it?
No, I'm not. So spell it out, please.
Yeah, it's Chronometer.
Okay.
it's, you've probably heard of MyFitnessPal and Lose It and programs
totally.
Like that.
Totally.
You know, I'm not really a fan of those. I'm really not a fan of just calories in, calories out fueling. What Chronometer does is it tracks your micronutrients. So it tracks magnesium, vitamin D, zinc, amino acids. We've got omega-3s it tracks. So the goal is at the end of the day, if someone is hungry and they want a snack and they open their Chronometer where they logged maybe for that day and they see, oh, I have no omega-3s for the day. Maybe they'll grab a handful of walnuts instead of a handful of Tootsie Rolls.
Yeah.
It's more nutrient-based driven eating, and I really love that. Also, if someone puts in their supplements that they're taking, it will show them if they're going over too much.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So I think it gives, am I always low in magnesium? Do I never get enough zinc? But also, am I going so far over on these that it could also be throwing things off in a negative effect by having too much?
Now, is Chronometer a paid site or is it a free site?
It's a free website, and someone can download the app. I think there's more advanced versions for like $2 or $3 with the app. But you know, sometimes I hear that it's a little tedious to log each food, but I think once you get the system, it's fine. And, you know, I'm not encouraging someone to track everything they eat for the rest of their lives, because who wants to do that? What I am encouraging is, you know, throughout different stages of the training cycle, maybe track 3 days or track a week. And if someone's really wondering, hey, I feel like something's really off, they can track as long as a month or more. And the app will actually track their trends over that whole time frame and let them know how much they're averaging per day, not just each day.
Chronometer.com. Yeah, that sounds like a great one to take a look at. I will definitely check that out.
I think it's nice.
I do have a question here about aging and training. Can you address that as far as how training, especially the nutritional part of it, might change as we age? So maybe decade by decade kind of thing?
Yeah, I think as we age, there should be a little bit more emphasis on the protein element.
Mm-hmm.
And recovery nutrition, I think, is very important and sometimes brushed to the wayside. Also, that might be a time where we can assess if something like glutamine might play a role at certain windows, maybe during longer demanding workouts for the aging athlete. But yeah, really emphasizing that protein component can make a big difference, and really aiming for those great quality carbohydrates still. You know, I think a lot of times as people age, they kind of, I guess this isn't across the board, but a lot of times I do see that the palate for the sweet stuff tends to kind of lessen a little bit.
Yeah.
And the desire to strive and to understand how those quality carbohydrates really feel good when someone runs. So that's probably the biggest shift, is to make sure that they're getting sufficient protein.
I noticed that myself, that the protein has become more of an issue as I've gotten older. And I did read something about we don't absorb it as well when we're older. Do you know something about that?
Yeah, I think probably where that's alluding to is sometimes there's a decrease in stomach acid that can influence that,
oh, okay.
Which also plays a role in B12, iron absorption, zinc. B12, zinc, and iron and omega-3s are probably some nutrients for the aging athlete to look at more too, besides just that glutamine.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that a lot of that's probably related to stomach acid.
Okay, good. Myths about especially marathon nutrition, but sports nutrition that you might want to clear up for us.
I think you kind of hit on it before, is that there's one supplement that is the surefire supplement that's going to make everyone fast and brilliant. Yeah. And I think I just can't encourage enough the value of whole foods and going less prepackaged if as much as possible. And, making that plate brilliant with bright colors and ingredients that really shine, I think that can bring just as much to your life as something in a pill or a package.
Nice. Now, what about people or experiences in your life that have had a big impact on you? And we're kind of changing direction here a little bit because you've given us such useful information on marathon training. But what things might have affected your life in a big way that have brought you to where you are today?
You know, I never thought in a million years when I finished up my college running experience that I would have been striving for winning marathons and being a part of an Olympic team or Olympic trials. I definitely feel like I attribute a large chunk of that to my coach, who made me realize that you know, that certainly is within reach. And then my husband, who absolutely encouraged that you know, never settle ultimately is what both of them taught me. There's always more in there if you have the desire to go work for it.
What was it like winning what was the name of it? The Indianapolis?
The Monumental Marathon.
Yes. What was it like winning that? What did that feel like?
It's funny you say that because that carried more emotion than I think you'll ever know. But the 2008 Olympic trials, I had great training and I had high hopes for it only to get injured not too long beforehand. And believe it or not, I finished last in the 2008 Olympic trials. A lot of people dropped out behind me, but it was one of those I thought, I don't know if I'm ever going to come back here again. I have to get a finisher's medal today. So I just finished it to finish it, and it left me with a lot of unsettled energy. And to re-qualify at my hometown marathon with the support of everyone I love here and to really feel like I owned it and I had another shot to redeem myself.
Totally.
It carried a lot of meaning. It was a beautiful moment I'll never forget.
Wow. Wow. That's a wonderful story. And I had an experience like that at a much lower level. But when you overcome that kind of adversity, it's life-changing, really.
It is. It absolutely is. I'd love to hear your story sometime.
Well, it's so small, it's really not worth telling. We are coming to the end of things here, and we are just about to change gears. But first, a word from our sponsors. The 2018 Runners Connect Running Retreat is your chance to bond with fellow runners and learn directly from our awesome coaches. This year, the Running Retreat includes 6 awesome lectures from our expert staff of coaches, private one-on-one coaching time to discuss long-term training, goals, and anything you need help with, amazing runs through the scenic mountains of Blowing Rock that will leave you refreshed and ready to crush your race, video analysis of your running form and specific exercises for how to fix your issues, active stretching and strength training sessions. Now, I know what you're thinking. An adult running retreat? Really? For my vacation? Yes, and it's one of the best things you can do for your running. And if you're anything like our past attendees, you'll have a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You can learn more about the retreat at runnersconnect.net/retreat. This year's dates are August 23rd through 26th and September 6th through 9th. So reserve your spot before we sell out. Welcome back. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, and I am with the guest Jackie Dykus, a nutritionist and marathon runner, and we are moving into the final kick here. So, Jackie, am I pronouncing your last name right?
Yeah, you might be the first person ever who's gotten it without me ever saying anything. I'm impressed.
Oh, thank you. I actually called you on the phone and got your message machine, and I think that's what you said, you know, so I was trying to say it the same way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I got it right. So did you have a chance to look over the final kick questions?
I did, yes.
Okay, so you're prepared here. So there's actually 4 of them, and the first one is the most fun for me, and it is, what is your favorite local training run? And tell us enough details that any of us who are listening would be able to come to your town and find this place and feel safe and know how far we can go and all that kind of stuff.
Yes, well, by far my favorite place that I spent most of my life training is Eagle Creek Park. It's located on the west side of Indianapolis. I used to live about a mile away, and it was my training ground, full of lots of trails to run on, with paved routes too, with mapped courses all the way to a 6K, and lots of hills if you like them, but you can find flat ground too if that's more your route, and trails. But, you know, gosh, you could run as many miles as you like. I've run many 20 to, gosh, I think probably my longest run in there was around 24 maybe. Mm-hmm. But you can get a lot of miles in there to even just a short run. So it's a beautiful place.
And what about parking, lighting, safety, those kinds of things?
Yeah,
and what is the surface like even?
You know, it when you enter, it's a city park, but it has very much a state park feel. Mm-hmm. So if you can kind of relate to a state park parking, entry, lighting, there's spaces that aren't really well lit, but headlamp is fine. And with a headlamp, you just might get startled by some wide-eyed deer. but I've never felt unsafe by any means. I run all hours in the park and felt great, but I think it technically does go dawn to dusk.
Oh, you mean open dawn to dusk,
yes,
kind of thing.
Yeah. Not that you can't, you know, go through the gate. Not that I'm encouraging that, but Right. Yes, I think it's beautiful sunrises and sunsets there.
Yeah. Now, is it paved or is it dirt?
There's paved roads that can be marked. I think they have different race markers on the paved section, mm-hmm. From 4K to 10K, things mm-hmm. like that. And then there's trail runs that are also marked with little signs that have figures that you can follow these figures. And there's even a lake that these off-road trails can take you around. So, or a reservoir, it's a water reservoir, but yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for different styles of running. When you come into the park, if you just look for some of those signage, you should be able to find either a trail if you want to go or signs to follow the trail or signs to follow the paved running routes as well.
This has been such a fun section of the podcast for me because there just are incredible running places all over the country and the world.
I bet. Oh, gosh. And if only we could find the time to hit them all,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I know. It's true. Yeah. So a recommended running book. Now, you've written a book, and I'd love to hear, you know, a little bit about your book, but also if there's another book that you just feel really made a difference in your life.
Yeah, well, I recently published a book, Finish Line Fueling, An Essential Guide for Runners. And what it is it holds a lot of the basic information, maybe a little bit, it carries basic and in-depth for the people who are more competitive and kind of want to know those deeper details. Mm-hmm. But the first half of the book is that, and then the second half of the book is actually styled more like a cookbook that applies the information from the first half of the book. So in the book, you'll find pre-race recipes. I have recipes for even make your own sports drink if you sometimes want to work in runs where you're not necessarily using commercial products and things like that.
Great.
To just everyday fueling recipes.
Yeah.
And then as an aging runner, you know, I'm nearing 39 and I recently picked up a book by Jonathan Beverly called Run Strong, Stay Hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe it's just a stage of life I'm in right now, but I found the book just really... I don't know. I found it wonderful to hear how other people feel throughout life and aging and how running just shapes so much of who they are, but it evolves throughout their life too, to carry different meanings at different stage of life.
Totally.
And I don't know. I felt like the book is just what I needed recently. I read it probably about a year ago or so, but I don't know. It's a nice option to stay motivated for those of us who are aging and
which
running.
We all are. We are aging. So run strong, stay hungry.
Yeah.
Okay. And question, tidbit of wisdom or humor for our runners?
Oh, that's a good question. Tidbit of wisdom, I would say, is sleep. When in doubt, make sure you get enough sleep because really things connect much better if you're getting a nice, well-rested sleep. And it's easy to put off as we age between work and family and other situations. And sometimes we even put the run before sleep.
Yeah.
So I think sleep is underestimated and really can influence cortisol and so many factors. So when in doubt, if you're not sleeping well, things either probably need to be changed in your training, nutrition, or life.
Good. Excellent tip. Now, is there someone or some subject about running that you would like to listen to in a future podcast?
I would probably say that I'd love to hear a topic on some of the places you've described, highlighting different places in the world to run beyond just racing.
Oh.
So I know for me, I really aspire to someday run rim to rim, but that's the extreme, right? So, or not the extreme, but it's not necessarily, the easiest logistically and things like that for everyone to do, especially if the government closes, which I've heard happen to a few friends of mine where they couldn't even get in at that time.
Wow.
But I'd love to learn about different places, even around the country or the world, but exciting places that people just, wanted to share where to run.
Right. What a great episode that would be, or somehow weaving that into some of the things that we offer. I love that idea. So Jackie, yeah. We're almost out of time and I want to thank you so much for your contribution on the nutrition and marathon training. Really, really good stuff today. So give us contact information and how our audience can stay in touch with you.
Yeah, well, they can reach me through my website, nutritionsuccess.org, or via the Facebook page as well, or follow me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all those fun things. But that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me is through my website.
And say your website again.
NutritionSuccess.org.
Excellent. And your Instagram and Facebook, are those under Nutrition Success as well, or are they under your name or what?
That's my Facebook is under Nutrition Success, and then my Twitter is under my name.
Okay.
Jaditis RD. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. So, Jackie, it's been terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Been a lot of fun. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it really has been fun. I've learned a ton today, which I just am so impressed and thankful. Thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. You can follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook at runnersconnect.net/FB for Facebook. Post any questions or comments you might have on the Facebook page. I read through them and will gladly respond, so please stay in touch. Also, subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. Jackie, thanks again for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you, listeners. We'll be back next week with another great talk to entertain you as you head on out to your favorite running spot. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.